Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Happening now, breaking news. President Biden is making new promises to hurricane victims in Louisiana as he sees the damage and the hardship firsthand tonight. Hundreds of thousands of homes and businesses still don't have power nearly a full week after the storm. We're also following the catastrophic flooding in the Northeast, the death toll rising to 50 as searchers look for those still missing in communities underwater. And we're also learning that foreign terrorists are now looking to exploit the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, as well as the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks next week. Is that a threat to national security? We want to welcome our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer. You're in the Situation Room.
This is CNN Breaking News.
And we begin with President Biden's tour of hurricane damage in Louisiana. Our senior White House correspondent, Phil Mattingly, is covering that breaking story for us. So Phil, we heard the president speak just a little while ago, promising to support storm survivors and acknowledging their frustrations. What's the latest?
Yeah, there's no question about it. President Biden showing up down in Louisiana, making clear he saw the victims. He wanted to personally see the aftermath of that storm, and that the federal government's support was both expansive and steadfast. Also, that it was going to last far longer than perhaps people were paying attention to things outside of the Gulf Coast, a recognition of just how much this community, these communities will need in the weeks and months ahead. But he also made clear that this can't just be about now, given the scale of the storms, given a scale of the disasters we've seen repeatedly over the course of the last several years, there needs to be more. Take a listen.
There's much to be done. We're working around the clock with the governor and the elected officials here until we can meet every need you all have. Folks, Hurricane Ida is another reminder that we need to be prepared for the next hurricane, and superstorms are going to come, and they're going to come more frequently and more ferociously. I've been working closely with the governor and our colleagues in Congress in both parties on my Build Back Better plan that will modernize our roads, our bridges, our water systems, sewers and drainage systems, and power grids and transmission lines to make sure they're more resilient.
Wolf, obviously the president alluding there to his dual-pronged legislative proposal, an infrastructure proposal, kind of a more sweeping economic and social safety net expansion that Congress is currently considering. Inside both of those proposals, billions of dollars for climate-related expenses, for resiliency, for infrastructure to try and rebuild or build in a more substantive way some of the very issues that we've seen play out, not just in the Gulf Coast, but in particularly in an acute manner in the Northeast. However, when it comes to the actual response right now, the president making clear every agency in the federal government that might have a piece of this is engaged, whether it's the FCC trying to help with cell phone connections, the Department of Transportation, Department of Energy, when it comes to gasoline. The FEMA is obviously the lead agency. Cedric Richmond, former Louisiana congressman, now senior advisor to the president, is running point at the White House. When you talk to White House officials, they make very clear, Wolf, the president and his team understand that the scale of the destruction brought by such storms like this requires a federal government response as expansive as possible. And that is what the president tried to convey today, is what he's bringing to the table, Wolf.
All right, Phil, thank you very much. Phil Mattingly over at the White House. Let's go to the flooding disaster in the Northeast right now. Our senior national correspondent, Miguel Marquez, is in Passaic, New Jersey for us. Miguel, half of the 50 confirmed storm fatalities are in New Jersey. What's happening there right now?
Yeah, look, and they're still looking for more, Wolf. You know, the night of that big flood, the water in this park in Passaic was about up to my chest. These car tracks, that's where a car was sitting. There were two people in it. Some people say that they went into the drainage ditch beyond. It's not very clear because it was a very chaotic night. Family is hoping they are still alive.
Tonight in Passaic, New Jersey, dive crews have suspended the search for two missing people. Officials say a man and a woman were in a car near a drainage ditch when they got out or were forced out by the floodwaters. They were then swept away by Ida's deluge.
There were 7 feet water at that time. The water force was so high, and they might be somewhere in the bank of rivers.
The drain empties into the Passaic River, which remains above flood stage at this hour. Tonight in Philadelphia, floodwaters haven't fully receded along many streets and parking lots that remain underwater.
At the same time, we're moving into a recovery mode and a cleanup mode. The recovery process for this is going to take months.
Damage from a tornado just outside Philadelphia. No one prepared for a tornado here.
It's unimaginable.
The Twister, winds up to 130 miles an hour, ripped through Fort Washington, damaging homes, businesses, and bringing down power lines.
I mean, the landscape of our community is completely different.
Power poles strewn across streets, huge trees uprooted in neighborhoods, and even roads and overpasses left in disarray. Today, 4 million people in the Northeast remain under a flood advisory due to swelling waters. At one apartment complex in Philadelphia, the National Guard rescued almost a dozen people and their pets, one of several in the area.
We really appreciate it. You know, we were waiting for quite some time, and you don't really expect these types of things to happen when, you know, you're in a big building like this.
Today, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy getting a firsthand look at the devastation in his state. That's where at least 6 people remain missing and more than 24 reported deaths.
It's quite clear our state and our nation does not have the infrastructure to meet this moment and to meet the future as it relates to these storms.
In Mullica Hill, families are trying to recover after a tornado ripped through their homes.
Our house is gone. I said, what do you mean? He said the tornado.
We were all huddled. He was over me. Everything was falling on our backs. And luckily, our house has a walk-up basement, or we would have never gotten out.
New York saw some of the worst flash flooding in the region. At least 16 people died across the state, with nearly a dozen victims in Queens alone.
There was only sadness, and it's just overwhelming.
At least 8 of the victims in New York City died in basements.
Those who lost a loved one, someone swept away in a car, people trapped in their basements, not able to escape. Those are the images that haunt me in the aftermath of this storm.
So the search for the 2 young people who disappeared here has been called off for tonight because the tide is coming in and it's too difficult for searchers to continue that search. But I got to tell you, here in Passaic, everywhere you look, the cars along the way, apartments being emptied out, this entire area, not only here but across the Northeast, recovering, trying to figure out where to go next. It is amazing how powerful and how widespread this storm was. Wolf.
All right, Miguel, thank you very much. Miguel Marquez in Passaic, New Jersey. Let's stay in Passaic right now, get some more on the flood emergency in the Northeast. We're joined by the mayor of Passaic, New Jersey, Hector Lora. Mayor, thank you once again for joining us. When we spoke last night, you told me about the heroic efforts of your first responders who were still searching floodwaters, looking for missing residents. Do you have any updates, Mayor, on those 2 people specifically missing?
Wolf, the efforts continue to try to find these individuals. Our community as a whole is so hopeful, optimistic, almost hoping against all hope that we can find them alive, maybe even another municipality. We've been calling all the hospitals, but all indication points to the fact that they may have gone through that culvert, through the drain. So we searched the entire drain. The firefighters, we had additional assistance from Clifton, Patterson, the state of New Jersey, the National Guard out here assisting through helicopters using sonar over the river. We have not located them as of yet. These 2 young individuals who were actually our prom king and queen this year at our prom in the park because of COVID. They are still missing. I have been with the family throughout the day. We have reached out to individuals in the area to see if they've seen anything. We have a number of individuals that are displaced because of the storm. We had a loss of life in the city, Wolf, a father who could not be rescued but watched his wife and his son get rescued from a vehicle by these heroic individuals, these firefighters, who, with sometimes disregard for their own safety, went into conditions to save others, our police, and our paramedics are remarkable. We had over 200 rescues just that night alone. But unfortunately, with missing individuals, and you've heard we have six in the state, it's such a challenge because there is no moving forward. It's almost like grief in limbo. You don't know what's going on. You don't know whether you're grieving a loss or you're still concerned whether missing individuals can be found. Even though everything may say they won't, you still hope for the very best. And as a community, Wolf, we're banding together and our hearts go out for all those who have lost loved ones throughout the state. In fact, in all of our states and all of our areas, it was devastating.
Totally devastating. And I know you got a lot of needs still. And we're going to be with you. We're going to continue to report what's going on at Passaic. Thank you so much, Mayor, for joining us.
Thank you, Wolf. Thank you very much.
And good luck to you and your entire community. Just ahead, we're getting new intelligence right now on foreign terrorists who and how they may, repeat, may try to use the Afghanistan withdrawal against the United States as we near the 20th anniversary of 9/11. We have new information. Stay with us. You're in the Situation Room. There's more breaking news coming into the Situation Room right now. We're learning about new U.S. intelligence on foreign terrorists. Our senior justice correspondent, Evan Perez, is joining me right now. Evan, the 20th anniversary of 9/11 is coming up. What are you learning from your sources?
Well, Wolf, the Homeland Security Department and the FBI have put out this bulletin to law enforcement around the country in anticipation of the anniversary of 9/11. And according to them, they're monitoring media that are associated with both Al-Qaeda and ISIS using the 20th anniversary of 9/11, as well as the recent withdrawal from Afghanistan to essentially try to use this to raise recruits, to try to draw recruits to their movements. This is something that obviously raises the concern of law enforcement. They know that there are people here in this country, perhaps who may be consuming some of this stuff, who might want to carry out some kind of terrorist attack because of this kind of inspiration. Again, this is something that we've seen in the past. You never know when someone sitting at home watching this kind of stuff will act out. And so that's why these bulletins go out from the Homeland Security Department, from the FBI. Our Geneva Sands obtained a copy of this bulletin that describes some of those concerns by law enforcement.
And we're also told these terror groups are potentially going to be trying to seize on the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Right. And one of the things that this bulletin mentions is that there's this Al-Qaeda video, this video that they put out essentially celebrating what happened on January 6th and raising it essentially as an example of the of something that what they refer to as the fourth airplane couldn't accomplish on 9/11. Of course, that's a reference, it appears, to the plane that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And so that gives you a sense of how closely they're watching events in the United States and what they see as perhaps a way to inspire their own followers to try to follow through on some of those things.
Yeah, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, a week from tomorrow.
Right.
Of course, we'll have special coverage all day on that. Thanks very much. Evan, for that report. Let's bring in our national security analyst, Kerry Cordero, and Peter Bergen to discuss. Peter, by the way, is the author of the new book entitled The Rise and Fall of Osama bin Laden. Very timely, very important book. Peter, how exactly would foreign terrorists, whether Qaeda, ISIS, other groups, try to exploit the upcoming anniversary of 9/11, and for that matter, the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan?
I think we're going to see heavy exploitation of both of those. I mean, in the minds of the jihadis, they've had three great victories, forcing the Soviet Union out of Afghanistan, 9/11, and now forcing another superpower out of Afghanistan. They're going to, believe me, they're going to celebrate it as much as they can. We've already seen, you know, pictures of the Taliban using U.S. armored vehicles and waving their white flags, very reminiscent of ISIS in the summer of 2014, which rolled into Iraqi cities on U.S. military vehicles waving their black flags. And we're going to see, I think, a lot more of that in the coming days. It's something that they will want to celebrate.
I'm sure they will. You know, Kerry, I know you worked at the Justice Department as a counterterrorism lawyer during and after 9/11. How do intelligence agencies try to get ahead of these specific threats?
Well, in the years after September 11th attacks, there certainly was a heightened threat environment, and the anniversary oftentimes did lead to this exploitation and messaging efforts by the groups to try to take advantage of those anniversaries. And the 20th is obviously very significant. The big difference today that was not in place in that era is that our federal government and the partnerships with state and locals to address counterterrorism matters is far more robust. So in terms of the report that Evan referenced, according to CNN's reporting, was issued by the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and the National Counterterrorism Center. Two of those organizations didn't even exist, NCTC and DHS, at 9/11. And FBI at the time was very under-resourced in its counterterrorism mission. So the U.S. government effort, the information sharing, is far more robust today than it was then.
And that's good to hear. Peter, as you heard, Al-Qaeda is seizing on the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. And we've just learned, this is important, the U.S. Capitol Police will now brief lawmakers on a rally that's scheduled for September 18th, a rally sympathetic to the January 6th rioters. How are officials balancing foreign and domestic threats?
Well, right now, they regard both as highly problematic, according to the FBI. And I wanted to pick up on something that Carrie said that with some of the good news. I mean, on 9/11, I think there were 32 joint terrorism task forces. Now there are, you know, more than 100. So it's not simply that we have the National Counterterrorism Center, TSA, DHS, a bunch of new alphabet kind of agencies. So the defensive capabilities of the United States are in much better shape. That doesn't prevent, as you know, lone actors getting excited by this propaganda. We saw that with ISIS propaganda. You don't have to travel to Syria or Iraq for training. You just simply, get inspired and you carry out an attack in the name of ISIS. So unfortunately, I think we're going to be seeing some of those types of things in the coming years, because the victory in Afghanistan for these groups is, you know, the most significant thing since 9/11.
Yeah, they're going to be really playing up that. Carrie, when it comes to the January 6th, the subject of January 6th, the riot that occurred here in Washington up on Capitol Hill, we've also just learned that a high-profile guilty plea from the so-called QAnon shaman. Do you expect we will now see even more guilty pleas from fellow rioters? There's been about 600 federal charges. So far, there have been about 50 guilty pleas, we're told.
Well, there have been hundreds of charges, and these guilty pleas will be based on the individual circumstances. Each individual, some of the individuals were involved in more aggressive type activity. Others were charged with lesser crimes. And so their willingness to plead guilty is going to really depend on their individual circumstances and how they think that they are going to be treated by the judge that they are before. Certainly, though, going back to your prior point with Peter, the current environment is so different than 20 years ago because we have this heightened domestic terrorism threat as well. And so January 6th was a significant event in terms of a small number of people threatening the actual process of our constitutional democracy functioning. And as grave as 9/11 was, it didn't necessarily pose that constitutional threat, excuse me, that January 6th did.
Clearly, Capitol Police are already gearing up. They're building up security out of an abundance of caution, looking ahead to some of these moments. All right, guys, thank you very, very much. There's more breaking news just ahead on President Biden's visit to Louisiana as we're learning new details about the deaths of some hurricane evacuees. We're back with the breaking news out of Louisiana. President Biden getting a firsthand look at hurricane damage and promising residents of hard-hit communities that he has their backs. Let's go to Brian Todd. He's on the scene for us in Louisiana. Brian, as the president has been there visiting, there's also an investigation being launched into four hurricane-related deaths. I know you're working this. What can you tell us?
Right, Wolf, we have new information now. The Attorney General of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, has just announced he's launching a full investigation into what happened here, where four patients from nursing homes died after they were evacuated to this warehouse to ride out Hurricane Ida. You can see behind me wheelchairs and hospital curtains that were hastily discarded when hundreds of patients were taken out of here only yesterday. We've been speaking with local officials and others, and we have new information tonight on how this tragedy unfolded. Wheelchairs and hospital curtains scatter the site of this remote warehouse where four nursing home residents died.
This is a nightmare. It's
a nightmare.
Local leaders now looking for answers for what went wrong.
That nursing home owner should be held accountable. As far as an investigation, we understand there is one.
The warehouse in Independence, Louisiana, served as a temporary evacuation facility for more than 800 patients from seven area nursing homes. The conditions inside were appalling.
Crowding, mattresses on floors instead of beds, porta potties instead of bathrooms, and probably not enough of them. It was just things that none of us would want our family members to have to go through.
And according to one patient who was inside, insects were crawling all over the mattresses. The Independence police chief says the facility was prepared for a certain number of residents, but the number nearly tripled quickly.
But I believe that the corporate management planned for 350. They, for whatever reason, sent in 850. And where they failed was in not proactively seeking to move those patients to an appropriate facility.
Renato DeRosa's 84-year-old mother made it out, but she suffered for several days with a 103-degree fever.
I could tell she was very upset, but at least I knew she was alive. And if we would have known it would have been a place like this, I would have took her with me.
With no power, generators required to provide patients oxygen failed, and the heat was oppressive. The state says the health department tried to intervene Tuesday when they heard about the deteriorating conditions.
LDH inspectors visited the site, and I will tell you, were expelled from the property and prevented from conducting a full assessment.
CNN obtained property records showing Bob Dean owns all seven of the nursing homes, plus the warehouse. Dean has a history of poor disaster management. A local investigation from NOLA.com found he made a similar plan to evacuate residents to a warehouse during Hurricane George in 1998.
I would hope that his license for nursing homes is revoked. It would be the outcome that he doesn't get to do this again.
The governor committed to a full investigation, a promise relatives will not let them forget.
Why didn't you contact anybody for help? Let somebody know what was going on. Contact one person. People shouldn't be treated like that. You should be held accountable.
We reached out several times to Bob Dean, the owner of the nursing homes and this warehouse facility, seeking comment and any explanation for what happened here. He did not respond to us, but he did tell CNN affiliate WVUE, quote, "We did really good with taking care of people." Wolf?
All right, Brian Todd reporting for us. Pretty sad story indeed. Thank you very much. Let's get some more from Louisiana. The state's Lieutenant Governor, Billy Nungesser, is joining us on the phone once again. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for joining us. Let me get your reaction to the deaths of those nursing home residents who were crowded into that warehouse in ugly, deteriorating conditions as the storm swept through. How was this allowed to happen?
It's unbelievable that can happen in this day and age, especially when Louisiana has been through this, evacuating, getting people out safely so many times. We evacuated 15 hospitals, 23 nursing facilities, 47 assisted living facilities successfully. And to have this, something like this happen and these people be treated and lose lives is unacceptable. And it just gives a black eye to a bunch of medical workers for the greater good, do a great job of taking care of our elderly, and this shouldn't happen.
And I'm glad your Attorney General, Jeff Landry, is launching a full investigation that is so important. Lieutenant Governor, I understand you spent today surveying storm damage in southeast Louisiana. Tell us what you saw.
Yeah, the south end of Plaquemines Parish is still underwater. There's a lot of stranded cattle, a lot of dead animals, and the marsh grass is 6 to 8 foot piled up against the Mississippi River levee and still 6 to 8 foot of water on that road. They have cut the levees to allow that water to now flow out. It should be several days, but the south end of the parish is completely cut off. They are rocking the top of the Mississippi River right now, so they'll have an emergency way other than airboats to get those people in and out that are still in South Plaquemines.
We're hearing from some desperate Louisiana residents, Lieutenant Governor. They are asking, where is FEMA? Are you satisfied with the federal response to this disaster so far?
Well, we're never satisfied when people are out of air-conditioned fuel and are suffering. But FEMA was on the ground quickly here. I've been flying with the governor every day with the FEMA. The top FEMA people are here. They're getting pods out with water, with MRIs, and fuel is starting to get to those gas stations. And 25,000 linemen from 40 states is here to help get power back on. And I believe September 8th now is the date when a lot of the metropolitan area, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, will have most of their power on. And, of course, places like Grand Isle, Lafitte, South Plaquemines are going to be a real challenge in a longer term of getting power back on.
Certainly is. Good luck, Lieutenant Governor. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, just ahead, new confusion right now over COVID-19 booster shots here in the United States. There may be a delay for some Americans hoping to get their third dose as soon as this month. The Biden administration plans to roll out COVID booster vaccines in just a few weeks, but now CNN is learning the Pfizer shot may be the only one available, at least at first. Our national correspondent, Athena Jones, is joining us right now. Athena, there's some confusion tonight over the booster program. What's going on?
Hi, Wolf. There is. And along with that confusion over when regulators could approve the White House's vaccine booster program came concern the back and forth over when and whether boosters will be needed could contribute to the perception that federal vaccine policy is in disarray. Still, public health experts express support for treading lightly here and allowing regulators the time they need to evaluate the data.
Tonight, as Moderna announces it has finished submitting data in support of COVID-19 booster doses, confusion and possible scaling back of the White House's COVID-19 booster plan for September. Less than a day after Dr. Anthony Fauci said,
I would not at all be surprised that the adequate full regimen for vaccination will likely be three doses.
As the Delta variant drives new COVID cases in the U.S. to nearly 170,000 a day on average, and federal health officials urge the unvaccinated to stay home over the holiday weekend, new data shows a third so-called booster dose of the COVID mRNA vaccine provides more protection against the virus.
There's no doubt from the dramatic data from the Israeli study that the boosts that are being now done there and contemplated here support very strongly the rationale for such an approach.
In making the case for boosters, Fauci explaining Israeli data shows they reduce the risk of infection by 11-fold and of severe illness by 10-fold in more than a million people over 60. Another study showed the risk of infection fell up to 68% 7 to 13 days after a third dose and by as much as 84% after 14 to 20 days.
And this is
President Joe Biden announced in late August.
This booster program is going to start here on September the 20th, pending approval of the FDA and the CDC committee of outside experts.
But federal health officials warned the White House this week they may not have strong enough data on the Moderna vaccine by then to recommend its boosters. The booster plan for Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine recipients remains on track for September 20th.
You can't make an announcement and then say, we'll wait to see what the FDA and CDC says. That's just really not the right way to do it.
The acting FDA commissioner explaining why the booster announcement was made before all the data came in.
When it happens, we don't want to have a couple more months where we have to get ready and make a plan and then execute against the plan.
Meanwhile, health officials stressing vaccines are key to keeping people out of the hospital.
Communities with high vaccination coverage are seeing lower pediatric cases and hospitalizations.
New CDC data showing the hospitalization rate among unvaccinated children 12 to 17 years old was nearly 10 times higher than among fully vaccinated adolescents from late June to mid-August. And data show that in August, the rate of hospitalization for children was nearly four times higher in states with the lowest overall vaccination rates.
One big question here is whether confusion over boosters will hurt the overall vaccination efforts here in the U.S. Wolf?
All right, Athena, thank you very much. Good question. Let's discuss this with Dr. Ashish Jha, the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. Dr. Jha, as usual, thanks so much for joining us. As you know, Moderna just submitted the last of their data for approval of this third dose to the FDA. What's the likelihood Pfizer and Moderna both get included in the White House's booster plan rollout?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me back. I think the likelihood is very high. All of the evidence so far is leaning towards boosters being helpful, particularly for high-risk individuals. And that's true if you got the Pfizer vaccine or the Moderna vaccine. So I do expect that to happen over the next 4 to 6 weeks. Let's see how the data plays out.
Right now, as you know, Dr. Zha, guidance recommends getting a booster after 8 months. But is it safe to get a third shot sooner than that? As you know, in Israel, they get that booster shot after 5 months.
Yeah, so we don't know. We don't have very good data on this. What I'm recommending to people is don't go out and get it too early. There actually is a real immunologic benefit of waiting between the second and third shot. So if you got your second shot recently, there is no logic and no reason, really, no benefit of getting that third shot too early. Let's wait for FDA and CDC guidance and make decisions based on that.
As you also know, Dr. Zha, this coronavirus pandemic here in the United States is getting more and more dire every day. Right now, we're up to nearly 1,500 deaths, 1,500 deaths a day. Only a couple of months ago, it was 200 deaths. It's more than triple what the daily death toll was just 1 month ago. What kind of situation do we have on our hands right now?
Yeah, this is really both tragic and also preventable, right, Wolf? Almost all of these people who are getting hospitalized, almost all of them who are dying of a preventable illness. They're largely unvaccinated. And I'm worried that those numbers, those horrible numbers, are going to climb even higher. So we'll have to see where things go. But what people need to do is be careful at this moment and get vaccinated if you're not vaccinated right now.
With schools opening around the country, college students returning to campuses, including your campus at Brown University, are you bracing for more bad news, especially in those states where there are no mask mandates in public schools or on campuses?
Yeah, I think, look, I think schools that are being responsible, having vaccine mandates for the people who can get vaccinated, masking up indoors, doing testing and working on ventilation, I think they're going to be able to largely open up okay. But places that are flouting the rules that the virus has set, not our rules, but the virus's rules, they really are, I think, risking large outbreaks. And I'm very worried about what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I'm worried as well. Dr. Zha, as usual, thank you very much for joining us. We're always grateful to you. Coming up, President Biden is calling the near total abortion ban in Texas un-American. Can his Justice Department do something about it? We'll discuss when we come back. Tonight, President Biden is ramping up his criticism of the new Texas law banning most abortions and the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that allowed it to take effect. Listen to this.
The most pernicious thing about the Texas law, it sort of creates a vigilante system where people get rewards to go out to, anyway. And it just seems, I know this sounds ridiculous, almost un-American.
All right, let's discuss with CNN legal analyst Jennifer Rogers and our senior political analyst, Kirsten Powers. Jennifer, the president says he's looking into whether the Department of Justice has a role to play here. What do you think?
Well, it's kind of on two tracks, Wolf. I mean, one is there a way for the federal government to work to ensure that the women in Texas can continue to access safe abortion? So that's one side of things, and I know DOJ is looking at that, as is the Department of Health and Human Services. But on a separate track, they're looking into whether there's anything DOJ can do about this notion of the law, which is so unique in this way, that average citizens are the ones who really are enforcing this ban on abortions. Is there a way that it is illegal to kind of take the enforcement out of the hands of the government and put it in the hands of citizens? And I really don't know the answer to that. I mean, one issue is it's not enforcement in a criminal sense. It's civil enforcement. They're allowed to sue. And there are areas in which that is allowed to happen in other areas, but it hasn't ever been done in this area of abortion. So what he's saying is all hands on deck. DOJ is going to look into this and see in what ways can this be stopped to save the women of Texas from this constitutional calamity. And, you know, we'll have to see if they come up with anything. It seems like an uphill battle to me.
Because as you point out, President Biden, so many others seem particularly bothered by what they're calling this vigilante aspect of this law. Do you expect that portion of the law could inspire additional challenges?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we know that the extremist anti-abortion movement has been a violent movement for decades now, and the notion that this is just empowering them to go forward and to try to seek out people who are trying to get access to abortion rights and to stop them. I mean, the law says to stop them by suing them, but you know, we all know that isn't the tack that extremists have taken in the past. So I do think it's extremely troubling. I think it will be subject to many legal challenges in the years to come.
Yeah, Kirsten, do you think this new law in Texas could potentially, from a political standpoint, backfire and end up being a major motivator out there for Democrats?
It's very possible that that will happen because it is so wildly out of the mainstream, even for people who oppose abortion rights, and even in Texas, because it doesn't allow even an exception for rape or incest, which is something the overwhelming majority of people in Texas oppose. They would want there to be an exception. So it's even out of the mainstream in that sense. It's certainly out of the mainstream in terms of what Americans believe, again, including Americans who believe there should be some restriction on abortion. But this goes way too far, and it in effect overturns Roe v. Wade, something that Americans overwhelmingly do not want to happen. They support Roe v. Wade, even people who want to see limitations on abortion rights. So I think that this is so radical in terms of the effect of this, even when before you get into the vigilante aspect of it, which is also, I think, alarming, and most people can see that you are not only deputizing people to start, you know, turning on their neighbors, but you're giving them a financial incentive. And so this is something that is deeply troubling, and I am sure that if this had come before the Supreme Court, or I feel pretty sure if this had come before the Supreme Court, and it involved, for example, deputizing Americans to rat out people who had illegal guns, if certain guns were banned, I doubt very much that the conservative justices would just see this as something that their hands were tied and there's just nothing they could do.
That's a good point, too. Jennifer, some scholars have said that the way to make abortion legal here in the United States is to do it through the U.S. Congress. Can you explain the thinking behind that?
Well, certainly. I mean, the right to an abortion, to have control over your own body, is rooted in the Constitution. It's a privacy right rooted in the Fifth Amendment. And so the federal Constitution guarantees women that right. And so for that reason, Congress could legislate abortion to be legal nationwide. It always could. The problem, of course, is a political problem that's never been palatable to enough of the members of Congress to do it. But legally, it certainly could.
You think there's an appetite, Kirsten, in Congress to take this issue on?
Well, there's definitely an appetite. There just aren't the numbers. And I think that that's the problem. There's no question that among Democrats, that's something that they absolutely would like to do. They just don't have the numbers to pull it off. At this point, all Democrats have is the ballot box, and to use this for, you know, for the elections to show how extreme Republicans are going to be. And again, extreme in a way that is outside the bounds of even what a lot of their own voters believe. And this is also supposed to be the party that says, you know, we don't like, you know, judicial activism, and we don't, you know, we think that the law should be made by Congress. And here you have, again, Roe v. Wade essentially being overturned in Texas.
Yep. All right, guys, thank you very, very much. And we'll have more news just after this. Stay with CNN for breaking news on the flooding in the Northeast and the hurricane aftermath in Louisiana. And if you're looking for information how you can help storm victims, go to CNN.com/impact for details on ways to impact your world. I'm Wolf Blitzer. Thanks for watching. As we head into this holiday weekend, happy Labor Day to all. And to our Jewish viewers, happy New Year. Aaron Burnett Out Front starts right now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.